This is the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. My name is Annie Brown. Good to be with you this Monday. You're listening to the ABC Radio digital stream right now, and at 12:35 p.m., just before we head to the Bureau of Meteorology, we will pick up the rest of the FM analog listeners as the cricket coverage takes a break for lunchtime. But on the program today, I'm going to take you down to the Wodonga Sale Yards. I popped in this morning because today is the first day of the annual wiener sales. They've officially kicked off. It was just a small sale this morning with around 750 head of cattle, but overall for these sales, about 30,000 head of young cattle are expected to be sold right across the state in the next few weeks, and about 18,000 of them will be sold out of Wodonga. So it's a big week for those guys down there. I'll take you behind the scenes of what happens to prepare for such a big event, their biggest of the year. But also, really, this sale is a test of the cattle market at the start of the year and really sets the tone. It helps us know, will prices hold firm after very tough seasonal conditions in 2025? But also today, if you love a bit of nice machinery, you're going to love this story. One farmer has put a 95-year-old header to work this harvest. And also today, my first point of business is I've got to say thank you to Catherine, who texted in on Friday during the program. I was out broadcasting live in Stanley at a berry farm, very busy berry farm. And she texted in her rainfall total for the year, 828 millimetres of rainfall for Pooong North in Gippsland. Thank you so much for that, Catherine. And sorry I didn't get to that text on Friday. If you have a yearly rainfall total you still like to get in, maybe still doing the math towards the end of Christmas and New Year, we'd love to hear from you. And we always love to hear from you on the program, know what you're doing today. 0467 842 722 is the number to text.
The Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Table grape season is just around the corner for Victoria, with New South Wales and Queensland having started in November. Roughly 70% of Australian table grapes come from Sunraysia in the northwest of Victoria. The Australian Table Grape Association Chair Jeremy Boyd says the beginning of the season has been gentle, although delayed by cool weather.
Yeah, the weather's been pretty good to us, Timus. So far, so good. Obviously, it's been a bit cooler this year than we've come to expect. I'd say we're down on average a bit in terms of temperature. Not a lot of rain, which is good for us. The disease pressure's down a bit, which is a good thing. We did have a rather hot spell on the weekend with, I think, a 40 and a 43, which certainly woke the vines up. Got a little bit of sunburn, but it wasn't too bad.
With the cooler weather, does that affect the bricks at all for the grapes?
Going forward, it would, but they're not quite at that stage yet, Timu. We're probably still, you know, 2 or 3 weeks off that.
So where are things up to, I suppose, in terms of a timeline, just to give people an idea of when to expect table grapes to be ready for the table?
Probably early in the new year, Timu. We'll see some earlier varieties kick off. Just depends on the weather, but the cooler conditions have definitely delayed things, I'd say, up to a week from where they'd be at normally. The varieties from then on will follow throughout till May. We'll be able to buy some nice Australian table grapes.
Around this time, probably last year, when I was talking to people in the industry, they were pulling out some of the old varieties and planting new proprietary ones that increasingly the supermarket seemed to be looking for. Where are things landing at the moment?
A lot of plantings of the older varieties, as we call them, or the traditional varieties, Timu, but definitely the proprietary varieties are on their way up, and if they haven't already, they will surpass the traditional varieties in terms of volume planted. Proprietary varieties, everyone, I would say nearly everyone in the industry would have some by now. They're being planted at a great rate of knots. The export market's demanding them too, so it isn't just the supermarkets locally, it's also the export markets that are looking for the newer varieties. They're very popular overseas as well.
What the overseas market looks like and whether or not some of the markets are holding firm to the traditional varieties, even though you might say that some of the proprietary ones travel better.
Yeah, it's true. Our overseas markets are still keen on traditional varieties, particularly Southeast Asia. It's probably, I'll say, a 50-50 mix of traditional and proprietary. It's a little early on some of the proprietary varieties because they haven't been around for that long to cement a place in markets overseas, but there are definitely some they're very keen on. And also the Crimson Seedless is a traditional that we hope continues to be successful overseas.
You mentioned a little bit before, but 2 to 3 weeks, and then how long do you think the season will run to this time around, given that we're starting a little bit later than we normally would?
Yeah, so the earlier varieties start, say, sometimes early Jan, mid-Jan, and we'll continue harvesting varieties right through until mid-April.
As Australian Table Grape Association Chair Jeremy Boyd speaking with Timu King there. Now, barley, canola and wheat have all dropped between $11 to $15 since early December, reflecting strong supply and sluggish demand, with APW wheat sitting at around $330 a tonne and canola down to $750 a tonne. Many farmers say that is just above the cost of production. The latest figures from the US Department of Agriculture also showed that record crops are here in Australia, Argentina and Canada, with global wheat production jumping to 8.7 million tonnes. Grains analyst with Episode 3, Andrew Whitelaw, says canola values have also fallen quite a lot in recent weeks.
No, I think we've definitely seen a further slide in prices locally in Australia, but also overseas. Probably the biggest slide has actually been in canola, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think what we're seeing is, whilst we've had the overseas falls and they're finally sort of reflecting in Australia, the other issue we've got is that New South Wales has had a pretty big crop, and nationally we've probably the second largest crop on record. And what's happening now is that farmers are changing the sort of the distribution of their sales. Previously they would sell a little bit before harvest, around about seeding in July, forward sales for the coming harvest, tending to hold off selling until harvest and the post-harvest period. And so you're getting this, like at the moment what we're seeing is quite a influx of sales occurring at the same time. And when you add all that onto the market at once, it becomes a bit of a buyer's market. Also at a time when the market is a little bit quieter because of the festive period, traders and buyers, they don't have that fear of missing out. They don't worry, if we wait tomorrow, it won't be available tomorrow. They say, well, if we don't buy today, there'll be some available tomorrow.
I thought farmers were getting a bit smarter about that and holding on and having on-farm storage and things like that, but you don't think it's enough to sort of shift the dynamic?
Yes, there's still definitely a lot more grain going into silos and then being held on-farm for domestic homes, but there's only so many domestic homes. And also, on top of that, look, there's just a huge crop coming off, and that is pushing the market down, because at the end of the day, markets are driven by supply and demand, and there's a lot of supply, and that is something that is also replicated overseas. We've got big crops in Canada, huge crops in Argentina, decent crops in Russia. I said locally there's no fear of missing out, but globally there's also no fear of missing out. The grain is there and it's available for buyers to buy. But on top of that, we've also got other sort of, in this Christmas period, not much happens. There's no new real news. There's no new crops getting, fundamental information about them. But there is that specter of the potential of peace in Ukraine. And we have been speaking about that for 3 years, and there's been various, peace talks. But I think this is probably at the moment as close to peace as we're going to get. Where that peace, accords get signed, whether it is a peace process, I still wouldn't hold my breath, but it is as close as it has been. If peace does come, that does mean, things like, whilst Ukraine has been exporting grain, it reduces all that risk premium, but it also potentially does things like reduces the price of crude oil, and the price of crude oil dropping, which already has been dropping, has a fundamentally strong impact on grain prices.
What's happening with canola? Because I thought that there was some problems getting Canadian canola to China. Are we seeing a price increase for Australian canola as a result?
No, what we've really seen is a bit of a collapse in canola prices. We've seen prices, you know, from the start of December to just now, basically, for want of a better word, get absolutely smashed and absolutely hammered. And that is largely off the back again of, you know, Canada having big crops, global demand dropping, and also, I have to point it back to again, is that crude oil price. When the crude oil prices drop, oilseed prices tend to follow because of the significant quantity of our canola and other oilseeds, which will go into biofuels. So it is not a good sign at the moment the way the canola market has gone. However, I would say that it's still sitting above historical levels. It's still, you know, above $700 a ton for most people around the country. And also, I would say as well that we are still in that, you know, purgatory period between Christmas and New Year, when not a huge amount happens.
And so it's largely the oil price that's affecting canola pricing, you think?
Oh, it's a combination of factors. You know, Canada has a huge crop as well. Around the world, oilseed crops are doing pretty well. And again, it's just that little bit of drawdown in global demand. Soybean crops in the U.S. and the U.S. and China trade flows have been a bit disjointed this year. When you get to about September, the rest of the world's done, and it's just Australia. And Australia's had a huge crop, and also Argentina, sorry. But Argentina's also having a pretty strong crop this year.
And what about what's happening with Russia and Ukraine and their crop? How's that looking?
Look, their crop from last year was very good. I always sort of say, you know, take everything with a pinch of salt when it comes to what is happening in Russia at this time of year. We did have a lot of reports out about, you know, potential winter kill risk on the wheat crop in Russia, and various sort of dryness in some parts. But look, it's December, and we hear this almost every year, that it's dry or winter kill. It could be a good crop next year, it could be a bad crop, it could be an average crop. It's just way, way too early to say. When we get to sort of February, March, and we start to see issues with the Russian crop, that's when we can be, you know, a bit more positive about that crop. We do need a disaster somewhere in the world, you know, Russia, Ukraine, South America, America, Europe, and that will help, you know, propel our prices. But we'll just have to wait and see whether that disaster comes or not, because at the end of the day, globally, we are heavily reliant on about 8 countries, and their stocks are, you know, stronger than they were last year, but still the potential for those stocks to decline very quickly if 1, 2, or 3 major suppliers of grain come under pressure.
And no sign of that yet? No disasters in China or France or anything like that that we can point to as being an issue?
Ah, well, if you look at China, they never
have. Well, we never really know, do we? That's right.
But on the other side, it's just too early. There's still a lot of crop development to go. And I guess there's an old saying, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. You know, I think farmers, you know, the price is the price. But farmers have to be looking for, if they want to see any upside in prices, significant upside I'm talking about, it's probably not going to come in any time in the next sort of couple of weeks.
That is Grains Analyst with Episode 3, Andrew Whitelaw, speaking with Michael Condon there. If we take a quick look at the harvest update with GrainCorp, currently Victoria sitting at 2.8 million tonnes, it looks like, that's come through. Total grain receivals are all up between Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. We're sitting at 9.3 million tonnes that's come through harvest at the moment right now. Let's talk machinery now, though, because it may not always feel like it, but harvest is a lot easier than what it was a century ago. That's something Lee Baker, who farms at Wild Horse Plains, about 75 k's north of Adelaide, knows all too well. Lee is an avid collector of old machinery, and this harvest, he put a 95-year-old Sunshine Auto header to work. His grandfather bought the machine back in 1950, and though he does not know how often it was used, he has heard stories about it from his father.
I remember Dad telling me they got it stuck in a foxhole when they had steel wheels on it, and then after they got it stuck, they pulled it out and they got a local engineering mob at Yorktown, put rubber tyres on it.
And so what made you, why did you want to buy it?
I just like old things, and I thought that's the only sentimental thing that I was going to get from the family.
And what kind of quality was it in when you got it?
Didn't go, I towed it home, and then I brought it back here and put it in our shed, and then I drug it out about 40 years later. When I had a triple bypass, I lost all motive in life, and I thought, well, I'd do something. I got that out, freed it all up, the knife was seized, probably had a wheelbarrow load of rat manure in the thrasher. The thrasher was seized, there was sheepskin parts all through it, and then I bought a new set of plugs and got my cousin to make a new exhaust, and we towed it probably 10 metres and it started. And it starts reasonably good now. And we bought a new header this year, my son did, so I just wanted to put a comparison between the new one and the old one to say that the old still can do the job.
So you took it out a couple of weeks ago. Was that the first time you've had it out working?
Well, I had it out 4 years ago, but only did a little bit that time just to get it going. Then we put it in the shed, and then, yeah, I thought I'd get it out this year. And all I wanted was a photo next to the new ones, next to the old one, so I can put it on the wall.
And how did it run out in the paddock?
It ran quite well, actually. Well, it ran out of petrol once, because I only had the little tank full of petrol. I didn't, because it runs on kerosene. I haven't got kerosene, so filled the little tank of petrol up. We went, and then it ran out, so I put some more in it, and then we got it going again and did a bit more. It did get fairly hot. I suppose it was a warm day, but I suppose we're not used to sitting so close to the motor. We're all, nowadays, we're just used to sitting in air-conditioned cab and luxury. And GPS, whereas this takes a little bit to steer it and to work out how to use the header. Like, you need to start probably 10 metres before you actually get to the crop. You need to put, because it's only got one clutch, so you need to put the header in gear and the drive gear in gear at the same time. So you need to hit the crop at full speed with the header going. So that took a little bit to get used to how to work that one out.
What else is different from this compared to the new stuff?
I suppose the air-conditioned cab and auto steer, I suppose. I couldn't get the young ones to drive it.
What's the process?
It holds approximately 3 to 4 bags, the little box, and then you have somebody on the side which bags it off, and then I think it holds 10 or 11 bags on the bagging platform. Then when you've filled that, you go over and you put all the bags together and someone sews the bags up.
How many did you get when you took it out?
Oh, we only did 2 or 3 bags.
How long did that take?
Probably, I don't know, we were out there mucking around for an hour by the time we got it worked out how to work it. I want to get it out in 5 years' time when it's 100 years old. I'm going to play with it a bit more and get the rust out of it more, and now that I'm starting to get used to how to work it. It has got an instruction book, but I should have read that first, I suppose.
I think it's pretty normal for a farmer not to read an instruction book, from what I know.
I think you're right there. I don't think you'd get parts for it anymore, unless you find an old one that's wrecked to get the parts off it.
And in terms of the front, how does it cut compared to the new stuff?
Well, this is like a comb front, the old style. And the new ones are all open front, so they don't block up as much. They're open front, the new ones, whereas these seem to block up if you've got turnip or rubbish in your crop as well. You'll have more trouble with these feeding than what the new ones. But I suppose when you look at it, they're basically the same principle. It cuts it off, goes up into the thrasher and thrash it, and then it goes through over the walkers, whereas this has got walkers, the new ones don't have walkers. I like playing with old stuff, and I just like mucking around with it. I've always liked old stuff.
That's Lee Baker talking to Isabella Kelly about his vintage farm machinery there. And there's a great video of that 1930s harvester at work next to some much more modern ones online. Just head to abc.net.au/rural.
The Country Hour, part of your community and your life.
It's nostalgic.
For 80 years.
Hanging out with my brothers in the back of a ute.
The Country Hour.
They just naturally grow a beautiful shape.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories on ABC Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dick Sneddon of The Country Hour. with the program for the farm families of Australia. Today, an irrigation expert gives us timely information on farm water supply. And following the national news at 12:30 Eastern Time, we give you weather forecasts in your particular district for the next 24 hours. These rural ingredients are blended for relaxed listening with the best of music from star pianist Dudley Stapleton, who now plays I Miss You So.
This is one of the earliest broadcasts of the Country Hour. Back in 1948, presented by Dick Snedden and with a live pianist in the studio. Bring that back, I say. Hello, I'm Annie Brown. This year, the Country Hour marks 80 years since it first went to air on ABC Radio on December 3rd, 1945. And if you've enjoyed listening to the Country Hour over those many years, then you probably owe a thank you to John Douglas. The Country Hour was his idea. John Douglas was an agricultural scientist who convinced ABC management during the time of World War II in the 1940s to establish a specialist rural department to broadcast information for farmers. John Douglas loved getting out and about with his microphone, recording the sounds and atmosphere of working on the land, a tradition still well and truly alive with current day rural reporters. Here is John Douglas in the shearing sheds in Woodstock, New South Wales, in 1946, the early days of the Country Hour.
There's a cry of Willoway. Yes, it's shearing time, as an old sheepman remarked. The war's over, appraisement's over. The first auction sales are over, and things look pretty good on the wool front. So the Country Hour takes you to see the golden fleece shorn from those with valuable sheep. Well, we're over on the shearing board, and it's a very typical shearing board, as most Australians know. The men are working on the rams. These Romneys are enormous sheep, these rams. They're bald-faced, they've got no horns, and they tell me that there's one here that's putting up a terrific struggle with the shearer, tearing the fleece about, and they've just been able to hold him, that he weighs about 240 pounds. These men, of course, get special rates for rams, and they look as though they're entitled to the way they're struggling here like a lot of league footballers. Let's go over and see the ringer of this shed. He's a young shearer here called Ted Fuller, who's just brought out a very big ram out of the pens. We'll have a yarn of him. Hello, Ted. How are you getting on?
Not too bad.
By the way, you've been right through this shed. What is your record cut here?
202.
202. They tell me that last year you got 234. Is that right?
Yes, I saw 234 last year. Mm.
Talking about records, doesn't Jack Howe hold the record as a shearer in Australia?
He holds the blade shearer's record.
How many?
328.
328 sheep in one day. Well, that's certainly going. Well, I hope there's a few old-time shearers listening to this noise. There's no need for me to tell you, of course, that this is hand shearing being done at Werribee on the stud rams. Ray Denzel, who is operating now on a very big stud Romney ram. Say, Ray, I see you've been in the army.
Oh, yes, I haven't. Not very long out of the army.
Where did you get to?
I was in Wewak with the 2nd 10 Commando Squadron.
Commando Squadron. Well, that's a very good training, you know, for a stud ram shearer, I can see.
Yes, you need it, too. You need every bit of it. More or less, it's leaves them with a better staple of wool for show purposes.
That's Ray Denzel speaking to John Douglas, the founder of the ABC's Rural Department in 1946, in the shearing sheds in Woodstock, New South Wales. Celebrating 80 years of rural stories on the Country Hour, I'm Annie Brown. How good is that archival audio of John Douglas there in the shearing sheds? That's 79 years old, that audio, and it still sounds so good, doesn't it? Just the sounds of the shearing, it's incredible. We'll continue celebrating the 80 years of the Country Hour this year, as we've got 12 months, really, to celebrate all up. Right now, though, it is 12:30. It's time to find out what is making rural news with Emma Field. Good afternoon, Emma.
G'day, Annie. A mayor in outback Queensland says the community will start assessing the damage from floodwaters that peaked above the major level at Winton overnight. Winton Shire Mayor Cathy White says water levels in the Western River are beginning to drop and locals will begin cleaning up. She says the extent of stock losses won't be known until later in the week.
pilots have been in the air there flying and moving some stock over the last probably 10 days. They've been moving stock there out of creek systems to give them the stock a chance, but there still will be cattle that haven't been able to get out.
A pioneer and champion of the nation's beef industry, Sir Graham McCamley, has passed away at the age of 93. The Central Queensland grazier helped form the Cattlemen's Union and develop the Brahman breed work through work with the CSIRO and Queensland University. Brett Coombs was a family friend and talks about Graham McCamley's legacy.
You know, Graham was an innovator. There's no doubt about that. You know, what he did was just amazing.
How would you describe the legacy that he leaves behind?
Well, I guess, you know, the thing with Graham that always got me with him was, you know, he was always thinking, you know, like he was certainly an outside the box thinker. And, you know, there's no doubt that the Briggalo development and you know, the use of pivots and irrigation and all that setup that he set up at Tartras and Royals was his foresight. And, you know, the use of choppers, you know, he was a, you know, blade ploughing. I mean, all those things, you know, obviously I'm not saying that Graham developed, but he certainly was an innovator in getting them in there and just getting stuff done.
What can you tell us about his contribution to the breed?
Pretty amazing. And certainly Graham and Jeff, his brother, they were innovators in all that. And they were the guys that, you know, they obviously had cattle in here from the 50s imports, but they were the ones that went over there in the late 70s and imported cattle with a lot of the other pioneers.
Now, Annie, when you bump into friends this month, the obvious question you ask is, how was your Christmas? But for WA farmer at Boddington, about 120 kilometres southeast of Perth, Simon Kestrel, well, his answer is, our whole family spent the Christmas period fighting fires. One of those uncontrollable fires, which threatened the town of Boddington, ended up burning 95% of his farm.
Most people had said, well, everything's okay, we're going away for Christmas, we'll have Christmas lunch and come back, or workmen and things like that. He was meant to be heading off and these guys were going to go as well, but I thought, well, I better stay around. And then the workman rang because he's a fire captain of one of the brigades. He had a phone call and said that big fire out there was going to be on our place in 50 minutes. So I rang, we had a mob of sheep that we were worried about on a stubble paddock. Stress getting him in the yards, and then went out the back to have a look, and she was fairly raging. And before long, yeah, it was in the pasture paddocks, and there wasn't many trucks out there. It was probably only three or four at that stage, including myself. And then they started coming, and we were spot fires everywhere because it was coming out of bushes. You know, they were going 400 and 500 metres into the pasture and became uncontrollable, really. And then the winds picked up and pushed it further and went across the river, and that's when went into Ray's place and then threatened the town of Boddington.
A massive olive grove, which could be South Australia's biggest, along with an olive oil processing facility, is being proposed for Wakery in the Riverland. Leipzig Australia is behind the proposal, which will involve 385,000 olive trees planted across 1,000 hectares and a facility to produce an average of 2.5 million litres of olive oil a year. Leipzig's chief executive, Frank Vanassis, says the trees will all be irrigated and they hope to have it operational by 2028.
We're proposing South Australia's largest olive grove initially. We're also proposing a small employment agricultural park to facilitate the large-scale agricultural processing for the olive oil. It's going to take a few years for the olive trees to come to maturity. Once they are at maturity and we start picking the fruit, we have a goal to process that oil from the fruit within 4 to 6 hours. So we want the processing facility on site. Our olive grove has been supported by two substantial businesses. One is an ASX-listed company and the other one is a local processor who's been three generations in the industry. We're following a proven technique that they currently utilise, and our oil has been pre-purchased for 30 years.
That's a lot of new olive oil, Annie, and that wraps up Rural News for this Monday.
Thank you, Emma. That is Emma Field taking us through the latest in rural news. Up next, we will head to the Bureau of Meteorology and then to the Wodonga Sale Yards to check out the weaners.
The Country Hour
Celebrating 80 years in 2025.
Alex Brody from Lexton, sheep farmer and fencing contractor.
Yeah, Matt Brody, I'm his twin brother and same here. Got a small merino farm out of Lexton and we also do rural fencing contracting on the side. We love you guys so much that we'll be out there on the fence line listening to the podcast. As we're tying off, we'll listen to the Country Hour. Ags is your biggest fan over here.
Country Hour does a great job. Happy birthday to the Country Hour, 80 years. We want another 80 years out of you guys. Keep doing a great job on behalf of Victorian farmers. Good on you, fellas.
Yeah, happy birthday, Wazza. Really appreciate all the effort you do and what you do for the rural country Victorians. Our voice, it's important. It's great to have that valued as well.
80 years of the Country Hour.
Good afternoon, if you are just listening in. You are listening to the Victorian Country Hour. My name is Annie Brown, filling in for Warwick Long while he takes a well-deserved break over the summer period. It's good to be with you this Monday. Today is day one of a huge week of cattle sales in Wodonga. 18,000 head of young cattle are expected to be yarded this week, with a total of nearly 30,000 right across the state. I popped down to the sale yards earlier this morning to get a preview of what's to come, so I'll take you there a little bit later on. I also did see Leanne Dax down there, so you should get a full report of that market sale later on today, because the markets are back today on the Country Hour for the first time for this year. So we'll check in with them a little bit closer to the end of the program. But first of all, let's kick off and take a look at the weather. We're joined this afternoon by senior forecaster Daniel Sherwin-Simpson. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Annie.
A hot day outside. I see there's a warning for fire danger in the Northern Country already for today.
Yeah, so even though the heat is going to build later in the week, we do have a warning for extreme fire danger up in the Northern Country, as you mentioned. I'll quickly cover off today, and then we'll talk about the heat in the week. Other than that warning up in the north of the state, probably the only thing of real note is the possibility of seeing a couple of thunderstorms about the far east in the afternoon. Those become more likely about the New South Wales border of East Gippsland. You could possibly even get a severe thunderstorm if you're living right along the border. That could be bringing some damaging winds, large hail possibly even, as well as some heavy rainfall. But otherwise, we're looking at just a mostly fine, mild to warm day across most of the state. As we move into the next couple of days, though, heat really, really starts to build across the state. If you're in the west, you'll start to see it creeping in tomorrow. But broadly over the state, Wednesday is when we really start to see those hot conditions developing. Large parts of the state have 40 degree plus on the forecast for Wednesday. There'll be a bit of a slight reprieve if you're along the central or western coast on Thursday due to some afternoon sea breezes. But elsewhere in the state, still looking at very hot conditions through Thursday and Friday. So because of those hot conditions, we can probably expect some severe heat wave broadly across the state. If you go onto the BOMS website and look at the sort of heat wave overlay, if you flick through to Thursday, you'll see orange areas across most of the state, as well as some red areas up in the northeast, which could mean extreme heat wave for the northeast and eastern parts of the state. So extreme heat wave, whether you're, you know, healthy or fit, you'll still feel the real effects of these heat wave conditions over the next couple of days. We could see some places seeing 40 degree plus heat for 4 days in a row from Thursday to Friday, possibly even a couple of places such as Mildura, Oyong, Swan Hill up in the Mallee, possibly seeing 3 days of 45 plus degree heat in a row.
Wow, 3 days of 45 plus degree. I am just taking a look at that heatwave severity map that you mentioned there, and yeah, by Thursday it looks like 90% of the state is lit up in orange. It looks, yeah. Very hot.
Yeah, very, very hot conditions with this heat coming through. Possibly the sort of worst heatwave conditions we've seen since about 2019 or 2020. With these heatwave conditions, as we mentioned, there's a bit of fire danger today, but it really comes through later in the week. So currently we do also have the Mallee and Northern Country in extreme fire danger for Thursday. We could see another district or two pop in on that Thursday, possibly even on the Wednesday, but I think Friday will be the real day to watch out for when the fire danger forecasts come out for Friday this afternoon around 4 o'clock or so. We'll probably see a couple of districts in extreme, and that's because on Friday we start to see the winds pick up in a fairly fresh northwesterly and still a dry air mass. So with those gustier winds, hotter temperatures, expect some very hazardous fire weather conditions on that Friday. We will start to see a cold front move across from the west very late on Friday. This will more broadly move across the state on Saturday, but even out in the far east, parts of Gippsland on Saturday can still be expecting some hotter temperatures, with places like Mallacoota still hanging around 30 up in Corryong. They've still got a 38 on the forecast on Saturday, so some very hot weather coming up this week. So definitely look after yourself, stay hydrated, all those sorts of things, Annie.
Wow, a very important message. Anything else we need to know today, Daniel?
No, I think that's probably it. Unfortunately, if anyone's looking out for rainfall, probably looking mostly dry other than a couple of storms out in the east. As I mentioned earlier today, we may see a few light showers with that change moving across on Friday, but it's broadly looking like we could actually be getting some dry thunderstorms on Thursday and Friday, which pose even more of a risk for the fire dangers, unfortunately.
Thank you so much for the update this afternoon. I'm sure we'll talk again throughout the week.
Cheers. Thanks, Annie.
That is Daniel Sherwin-Simpson. He's the Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, talking us through that forecast for today and for the rest of the week. Some very hot weather on the way. Well, today is the first day of the weaner sales in Wodonga. It's a big week where approximately 30,000 head of young cattle will be sold right across the state in the next 2 weeks, and more than half of them will be sold at NVLX in Barnawatha. I popped down there this morning to take a look at the first sale and talk to the people working behind the scenes of the sale this year.
Have a look in the middle of those calves there, fellas. 1800, 18, 1750. More weight you buy there, gentlemen. 1750, 1750. Come in 1650, okay. Come in 16.
So my name's Tabby Cross. I'm the administration supervisor at the Barnawatha Sale Yards.
Jacob Curran, the business manager of NVLX.
Beautiful. So we're down here this morning. This is day one of the weaner sales. Can you describe to me like what this week means for you guys here at the sale yards?
Yep. So this is our biggest week of the year, and probably the biggest week for all our vendors and all the cattle producers in the area. So we'll yard 18,000 head over the course of 5 days this week.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So 18,000 head of cattle, Jacob. I mean, that's a lot of work for you guys. What goes into preparing these sale yards for this week?
So prior to Christmas, we ripped out the lanes, restrawed them, chipped the west yards, just getting everything neat and tidy, so everything can run as smooth as possible for the week.
How do you describe this week?
Hectic.
Hectic for you guys?
Yeah, it's busy. It's a busy week for everyone. And the hot weather at the back end of the week will make it pretty tricky.
Yeah, so the second half of this week, we're looking at 40-plus degree days all in a row. Yeah, what do you do to prepare for that?
Just everyone's got to try and work together, make it as easy as possible, and hopefully the transporters can get a fair few of the cattle out quickly and make a bit more room and just lots of water.
It's definitely nice having a roof on the sale yards at this time of year.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's good. It's good. Rain, hot. Yeah, it makes a big difference.
Do you have to do much in terms of like welfare for the cattle on these hot days?
Yeah, so we run a sprinkler system, like dust suppression. We'll put that on daily and just settle the dust down. And then the night shift crew will also run the dust suppression, so yeah.
Keep them nice and cool.
Yeah.
How many staff do you have on? Like, how many people are working here at the sale yards this week?
Probably close to 30, I would say. Yeah.
And what kind of roles are they doing?
So a lot of them are horse riders, which makes a big difference because 4 feet are better than two. Yeah. So they'll just run the cattle up to the scales, get weighed, and then push them back into scales, basically.
And today's the first day here at Wodonga for the sale yards. Can you talk me through numbers, day, like what does the week look like, Tabby?
Yeah, so today we're kicking off with the Ray White feature sale. They've yarded 750 odd head. Tomorrow we move on to our independent agents' black cattle, and they'll yard approximately 8,000 head. followed by Elders and Nutrients Black Sale on Wednesday, where we expect 4,000 head. And then the following 2 days, Thursday and Friday, are our all breed sale, and we expect 3,000 head to be yarded on each of those days.
Wow, so very busy week. And then you get a break?
So next week we'll have our prime sale, and then we'll move on to our feature female sale on the Thursday.
So back to schedule as usual.
Yeah.
So lots of cattle moving through here. So tomorrow sounds like really the biggest day for the sales.
Yeah, so tomorrow our agents are expecting 8,000 head. So it'll be a big team effort by transporters, agents and sale yard staff to get the cattle in, weighed, scanned and then sold and delivered out into the delivery yards.
8,000 head of cattle, how does that work? Do you have to sell them on and then start repenning? Like, is there enough room in the sale yards?
Yeah, so we work off a repenning process. So all our steers will be sold first, and then our heifers will be sold following the steers, and we'll move them out from our holding yards into our selling pens and sell them from there.
Is this a week that you guys look forward to or dread?
It is a good week. It is very busy, but it's great. We have a good team of people, agents, transporters and staff that make it a very enjoyable week. Yeah.
And numbers compared to last year, is it up or down?
It'll be hard to tell until we get all the cattle processed, but I believe it'll be fairly similar to last year's numbers, maybe slightly higher.
That's Tabitha Cross. She's the site administration manager there, and Jacob Curran, who's the manager at NVLX in Barnawatha, or the Wodonga Sale Yards, as we often refer to it. I think we call it the Wodonga Sale Yards. It's geographically more in Barnawatha, and it's technically called the Northern Victorian Livestock Exchange, but you know what we're talking about. But today's sale was a smaller yarding of around 750 head, sold by Ray White Rural, based in Albury. Livestock agent James Brown spoke to Timu King on the Rural Report earlier this morning. Here's a bit about what he said.
I expect the feeder market. We've got some quality grain steers and some heifers there that I expect to bring some strong competition from the feedlotters. And then once we get into our weaner steers, I think there'll be relatively strong interest. It all depends on how deep the pockets are of these northern buyers that have made their way down. The local competition as well. I think there'll certainly be some local competition. Our prices I expect to be relatively firm. Yeah, as always, we see premium for those heavier weaners that are presented right. The vendors do a great job of presenting them, yard weaning them. And if they've been pre-vaccinated, there's been a big cry through the industry for pre-vaccination on those cattle. If those boxes are ticked, I think you'll certainly see stronger competition on those particular lines.
It varies obviously from place to place, but on average, when I've spoken to different producers, we've had about half of the rainfall that we would normally see in the season. Does that dry spell mean that people are going to temper their expectations because there's not enough feed around, or is there enough supplementary feed to support going in heavy and picking up a fair suite of weaners?
I think you might see those adjusted according to the season. There's certainly producers that locally will step in and buy cattle, like when they've sold cattle the back end of last year or got cattle moving in the first few weeks of January, so they're going to just step in and replace those cattle. Anyone that's looking to replace females, if they've got rid of females throughout the year and need to build those numbers, they'll certainly be looking and be active on those selected lots.
That's James Brown. He's the director of Ray White Rural, based in Albury, New South Wales. They had their sale today at the Wodonga Sale Yards. And tomorrow I'll head back down there. It's going to be, like Tabby mentioned there, the biggest sale of the year, 8,000 head being sold out of Wodonga tomorrow. So we'll bring you all the action from there. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to hit the road to Yay, where there's also not only their weaner sales, first weaner sale happening there, but also the launch of their first mobile health van. This is a pretty remarkable story. This van is entirely community funded, contributions exceeding $150,000 and about $114,000 of that raised in under 24 hours at the Alexandra Truck Show in June. It's going to be pretty fantastic, I think. Amazing effort from the community there. Warren Davies, the Unbreakable Farmer, will be there and will bring you all the action from that sale and the launch of the mental health first mental health mobile van as well from the Yay Sale Yards. That's on Wednesday. So lots still to come from the Wiener sales this week out of Wodonga. So huge effort there. But let's stay with cattle, though, at the moment, because last week China announced a new tariff on Australian beef imports, which the industry here says could result in a $1 billion fall in value of exports to China. So what's behind that decision? Well, China said it wants to protect its domestic beef industry, which has been struggling to get established. Ben Lyons, Professor of Agriculture, Climate and Environment at the University of Southern Queensland, told David Claughton that China is also dealing with labour and feed shortages.
Well, it's very hard to understand a lot of the motivations because it's quite a convoluted system. But China tries to, overall at a very high level, China tries to manage its food trade or its agri-food trade. And this would be sort of, I don't know if it's specifically targeted to Australia because they've got a number of countries like Brazil, Argentina, New Zealand, Uruguay that export beef in a large scale or relatively large volume to China. So
they're all facing a big tariff, but they kick in at different levels. So ours is kicking in just a bit over 200,000 tonnes. I think the Brazilians, they've got 1.3 mil before they hit a tariff.
Yeah, and they exported to January, November. I think Brazil was about 1.1 million. So we were at looking at 295. So we, if we grandfathered and look back, we would have been paying 55% for about 90,000 tons. So yeah, so it's another chapter in the saga of Australian-China agricultural trade.
The intention behind though is to protect their own domestic industry. That's what the impression they gave.
They'd be worried about that. They've got this seesaw thing to do because their domestic industry is declining. The old sort of communist sort of data point of going up and to the right every year in the beef industry and in the number of agricultural industries is not the case with China's beef industry because of the opportunity costs in producing beef is too great. So people, a lot of Chinese peasantry have left the beef industry in China. We've seen a lot of aggregation or larger herd sizes to signify that. But also when you see their real census on cattle population, they have whilst it's sort of generally sort of rising, you see larger farms, so, increasing number of herds of up to 100 head or over 10 head, whereas it used to be a lot of herds of 2 to 3 in size. So in actual fact, they're declining. And despite, a lot of efforts to improve their genetics and look at feedlotting and intensive bovine agriculture in China's sort of had its ups and downs, David. So we might be, they might be on another push to drive up their bovine production. I don't know. We haven't seen that as yet.
Well, I spoke to a Wagyu producer who said, look, over a number of years they were sending Wagyu heifers, for really good money to China, and that's all dried up now. So what does that say about where they're at, do you reckon?
Well, I would make an assumption here that those heifers and that genetics was under a program of, with strong central government and provincial government support. So they would have been subsidised by the government. And I'd say that funding probably ran out. They'd have some successful Wagyu operations over there in a feedlot enterprise, but I'd say that was mainly under, preferential policies or, funding support from a government agency in that region to bring Wagyu genetics in, and that probably ended. It's probably nothing to do with the market, to be honest.
So you were suggesting that actually they're just not very good at producing beef. Is that what you're saying?
They're good at producing beef, but it's had a change. There's a lot of dynamics at play. And one of those key dynamics is the opportunity cost of farming in China is vis-a-vis other, ways I could utilise my labour as a person out in the rural on a farm. I'd be better off going into town and can work in construction. That's always been for the last 30 years, been a key tension in Chinese agriculture. They have a similar problem to Australia in many ways. It's a shortage of rural labour for agriculture. Mm.
That's Ben Lyons, Professor of Agriculture, Climate and Environment at the University of Southern Queensland, speaking to ABC's David Claughton there. You can read more about the China beef tariffs online. Head to abc.net.au/rural. Right now, though, it's time for the first markets of the year. We'll start at the Wagga cattle market, and it's a good afternoon to Graham Richard.
Good afternoon. Just under 2,000 head were penned. The quality was fair to good. There were a few good lines of weaners, good numbers of medium weight feeders, both steers and heifers, but heavy weights were limited. Trade cattle also in reduced numbers. Most of the grown steers were under 500 kilos and lacking finish. And same story with the grown heifers. 375 cows were penned. The market firmed to deer, heavy cows and the trade cattle, the improvers. Weaner steers sold to 522 cents, heifers 450. Medium weight feeder steers reached 490 and heavyweights 485, but most sold between 445 and 460. Feeder heifers ranged from 380 to 440. Trade steers 435 to 485. The heifers 430 to 454. Prime grown heifers 454 to 483. Bullocks reached 436. Heavy grown heifers 442 to 459, four score cows 390 to 425, the lighter and leaner two scores averaged 351.
Thank you, Graham. Let's head now to Bendigo Sheep, and good afternoon to Jenny Kelly.
Good afternoon. The year opened with a relatively small yardage of 9,900 lambs and 4,800 sheep. At least four processors were missing from the lamb buying group. Lamb prices held a $10 a kilo baseline, with most sales from an estimated $10 to $10.80. Occasional pens of very nice trades over $11. But some heavy lambs fell just under $10 a kilo at times, and worth noting, a lot more fed lambs with weight are starting to appear. Export lambs, $327 to a top of $368. Heavies, 26 to 30 kilos, $280 to $323. Average run of trades, $230 to $270. Decent light lambs, $160 to $215. Feeders paying up to $240 for trades to carry on. Sheep market still very strong, all but the really big meat ewes costing buyers well into the $7 a kilo plus range, with mutton over $8 at times. Biggest crossbred ewes, $240 to $273. Merino ewes to $275. And good weather's very strong at up to $289. Plain to trade to heavy sheep, $170 to $220 for most. Lightest ewes, $150. Jenny Kelly for MLA.
Thank you, Jenny Kelly there. Let's head to Mortlake now, and a good afternoon to Chris Agnew.
Mortlake agents yarded 1,417 head, an increase of about 200 on the market prior to Christmas. Overall, the quality was better across most sections. The market generally remained firm to slightly dearer by 10 to 15 cents in places for bullocks, grown steers and heifers, as well as trade cattle. All quality driven. Cows remained firm to slightly softer in places, grown bulls generally 15 to 20 cents softer. Bullocks sold up to a top of 486 cents with the better quality trade cattle. They range from 440 to 500 cents. Heavy beef cows making between 390 and 430 cents, while the medium weights selling from 330 to 380 cents. Dairy cows, the better covered ones, ranging from 360 to 405 cents, and manufacturing steers reached the top of 440 cents. Grown heifers generally selling from a range of 410 to 460 cents, and grown steers sold to a top of 486 cents. At Mortlake, this is Chris Agnew reporting for MLA.
Thank you, Chris. And lastly, let's head to the Corowa lamb sales now with Caroline Ronald.
Good afternoon. Returning from the Christmas break, agents penned just 4,600 lambs and 3,350 sheep. The quality was mixed, with shorn lambs well supplied and good weight available. Both the domestic and export processors were operating in a softer market. Heavy trade lambs slipped $11, $230 to $278 to average 1,048 cents per kilo carcass weight. Heavy lambs sold from $264 to $320, and extra heavy export types sold from $323 to $350. Heavy merino ewes sold from $178 to $238, and crossbred ewes up to $240. I'm Caroline Ronald for MLA at Corowa.
Thank you, Caroline. That's the end of the markets for today. good to have them back, isn't it? It feels like the start of a new year. Thank you for listening to the Country Hour today. I think Angus Burley is going to take over sitting in the big chair for you tomorrow. I think we've got cricket again as well. So listen to the digital stream if you want to hear the full show, or we'll see you at 12:35 when the cricket takes a break for lunch. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Have a great rest of your afternoon. Talk soon.